Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Welcome again here on Circles of Change. It's always a pleasure to reconnect with someone who was on our show, in this case, over 3 years ago. Lee Kravitz, welcome to Circles of Change again.
Thank you, Sarah. Great to be here.
It certainly is. Let me introduce Lee. He actually is on a mission that's, I think, parallel to Circles of Change, because he encourages people to really look back in order to move ahead in their lives. We featured his first book in May of 2011 called Unfinished Business, One Man's Extraordinary Year of Trying to Do the Right Things. Lee at that point chronicled 10 journeys he took to reconcile and reconnect with estranged relatives and friends, really reclaiming his life after he lost his job in 2007 as editor-in-chief of Parade, the most widely read publication in the United States. Born and raised in Cleveland and a graduate of Yale and Columbia in English literature and journalism, respectively, Lee has been an editor and magazine executive, freelance writer and photographer with journeys that took him to over 30 countries in that 20-year segment. In Unfinished Business, Lee really confronted underlying fears to clear up some complicated mistakes in his past that were holding him back from becoming a more complete and compassionate person, he wrote. In this new book, which we're going to talk about now, it's called Pilgrim, Risking the Life I Have to Find the Faith That I Seek. It recounts really openly and honestly an even deeper journey to find God and make sense of the combination, I'll say, of faith, spirituality, and religion. So right out of the chute, Lee, congratulations on book number two.
Well, thank you so much.
That's right. Now, if I get this correct, though, that I have a hunch that Pilgrim was evolving at the same time Unfinished Business was, but you may not have known to call it that yet.
Right. You're absolutely right. I think underlying everything I did in Unfinished Business was a spirituality that I had suppressed in my life. You know, when I was a kid, I had a real sense of a deeper meaning. And then as I got involved with my job and career of 20 years, I buried it kind of on a back burner, those spiritual longings and aspirations. And when I started to deal with my unfinished business in that first book, it began to simmer again. And even in that first book, there was a chapter where I went to visit a monastery where an old high school buddy of mine was a monk and bishop there. So, yes, it was stirring during that book, and it really came to fruition in the new book, Pilgrim, the new journey.
And, you know, people who write memoirs, it's not an uncommon experience that here you set out on this one journey that I gather really wasn't to write a book, but nonetheless it turned into a book, that you opted to go after some things you knew you wanted closure at that sensitive time of your life. And so I think a lesson for all of us is to realize we're in the fit of experiencing something, that there's some other tangential things always riding with us, you know, and if we can at some point reflect, or at least open our eyes in a little bit broader way, bingo, we might snatch them up.
I think that's a profound point that you're making, is that the reflection doesn't end with the initial journey or the book that comes out of a journey. The reflection continues on and may have a different flavor that comes out of what you initially set out to do. This one, in particular, came out of after 9/11, even though that preceded my unfinished business, it was sort of lingering inside of me, that sort of disruptive period in my life as a New Yorker and as a father. How do I explain that to kids, my kids? And later when I had a health scare, when I thought one night that I was having a heart attack and found myself calling out for God, it was saying to me that it was time to really pay attention to that voice within. But I didn't really know at first how to pursue that, how to go off on that new journey. I did find a way.
And you know, this idea of the voice within, certainly is, like you say, talking to your own self. But for those of us that are faith-based, it's recognizing the power of God, the power of the universe, however we capture it, is around us at all times. But many times we just have the volume of our own stuff on too loud to hear him.
The volume of our own stuff and also the volume outside of us.
Yeah.
You know, I live in New York City, but you can be anywhere in the world, and there's so much distraction, so much noise, so much, so many obligations, so many things in your daily life distracting you from that voice within. So one of the great challenges I faced, the obstacles, and that I had to have an intention about, was to become more contemplative. How am I going to find the quiet and the silence to go within and perhaps hear what that longing is all about?
And so, you know, right out of the chute, you've said one thing. You know, the fact that you were in very high-paced journalism and, you know, traveling the globe, which isn't always a cakewalk with regard to disconnected flights and upset to travel plans and so on, and then just the whole pressure of deadlines and so on, but also, like you said, the New York City lifestyle, that being contemplative, though, I think would be consistent with your having been a writer, was it not? I mean, this idea of your unpacking knowledge from that which you saw or what other people told you.
You know, that's a very interesting thing. I've been a writer since I've been 14 years old. In order to understand what I'm really thinking and feeling and aspiring toward, I need to put it down on paper. And it's very hard to do that if you're in a crowded room with a lot of noise, if you have people pulling you away from the hour, two, three, four, you need to really, really feel deeply and look deeply inside. So I've been doing that as a discipline since I've been young, writing poetry, short stories, and in a journal. And it was particularly hard because part of this journey that I took, I knew that that I needed to pursue this longing, this spiritual longing, to find a spiritual home, but I didn't want to go, you know, on a trip to another place. Mm-hmm. I would never do it in Greece in a monastery, or any whirling with dervishes. I do would have to be within 2 hours of my home, so I could be with my family.
Exactly. So that's the other piece of it that makes your book unique compared to some we might read of memoir in this space, is that you went on this journey within 2 hours of your home. And so I think our listeners would be fascinated to hear, how did you do that? How did you really disconnect? I mean, was this a matter of making sure you left the cell phone also unplugged or hidden from view?
Well, there were a lot of things that I had to do. First of all, I live in an apartment with three teenage kids, five animals, and a small place. And the noise is not only cell phones and TV and whatever they have on. It can be deafening. So one of the things I needed to do to be contemplative was to meditate. And it's very hard to meditate in those circumstances. And finally, I found little oases within walking distance. It could be that when I took my youngest to school, on the way back, I'd find myself in a Dominican church and just sit in the back with my eyes closed for 20 minutes, or in a park. You know, I learned to not beat myself up if my attempts be contemplative went awry, to begin again. So all that's one of the things that I did, one of the strategies.
And see, those of us who endured year upon year of corporate life and all these stupid meetings we got stuck in, that I became quite skilled at being able to do that in these bigger meetings. You had all your notebooks in front of you, but you knew how to strike that pose and literally go to the beach.
Did you really?
Oh, absolutely.
Fabulous.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, and every now and then you'd get caught because someone would ask you a question and you'd really have to make it up fast. Or say, could you repeat that, please? But, no, I do think, seriously, that finding those oases, I know for me personally, I find them on airplanes, believe it or not. When most people around you are so tense and tied up about, is it going to be on time? Is it late? You know, I haven't gotten my presentation or whatever. To be able to just sit there and zone out, provided I don't have Chatty Cathy sitting on both sides of me, that is a form of a religious spiritual reconnection. But it does take discipline to frame it that way, doesn't it?
Yeah, and travel in general is a great opportunity for spiritual exploration. You get into a dream state often when you're on a train or in a plane. And some interesting things happen where you open up, I think, both mentally and in terms of your imagination, and can find yourself transported to another place.
Yes, we're speaking with Lee Kravis, and his new book here is called Pilgrim, Risking the Life I Have to Find the Faith That I Seek. So, of course, New York City is a cornucopia of opportunities, thousands of churches, synagogues, mosques, and other venues to explore your spirituality. Did it also include then your attending services, Lee, and going to classes or community events at some of these more religious-based locations?
Yes, I did a lot of things. I a great deal. The first part of my journey was going to Quaker meetings, which were a wonderful way to not only become more contemplative, but to learn the art of listening, not only to myself, but to other people. I went to classes in Buddhism. I went to workshops in the Hindu art and practice of devotional chanting. Now, you don't have to be in New York City or someplace large and with a very obvious diversity of religions to find these opportunities. Any community that has a college campus nearby will have ample opportunities to travel the world of spiritual exploration. It may not be right down your street, but within driving distance, you'll be able to find a variety of yoga classes, meditation classes.
And so, Lee, for you, I mean, your opening chapter in your book, you talk about the fact that you and your wife, Elizabeth, were kind of destined to be together from the get-go, but every step of that early courtship, never the topic of God came up, so to speak. And so then, and of course, when we get so busy living life, right, that sometimes you don't get the pause button or the recalibration button. In your case, of course, having lost that major executive role, you being determined and taking that year to go through the unfinished business. But I tell you, to go through the journey of reigniting or re-exploring faith, that's got to be a pretty scary venture, particularly if, you know, you're traveling it alone. Your wife, was supportive of this, or how did she and your kids play in the journey for that you went on deeply for yourself?
Well, there was a fundamental difference between us in that my journey was one to find, get closer to, and develop a relationship with God, and they defined themselves as atheists.
Oh, okay.
So my wife, for instance, didn't understand the God stuff, and she also couldn't understand why I didn't get that happiness and fulfillment out of our otherwise just wonderful family life. Mm-hmm. So there was a tension there. And also because she went through tragedies in her life, I censored myself. I wouldn't talk about God when it came up as an aching and longing to me. I didn't want to rock her world. Mm-hmm. So that was really, and it became increasingly uncomfortable the more I needed to take a faith journey. But in the end, she was very supportive, because she's always essentially supportive of me. It's not easy for her, I know.
That's the power of the couples. And then you have your passel of teens, who, of course, are challenging, most teens anyways, every corner that they get to. So was theirs a little bit more of a go, dad, go?
I wish I could say it was go, dad, go. You know, but they're teenagers, so they say, go, dad, go, so we can interview with our friends.
go away, dad, go. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, go away, dad, go. I wish I could say that. I think now, as they grow older, this book may become a beacon to them as they, stretch themselves in their lives. And they'll remember when Dad was going to churches and synagogues and trying to find places to be contemplative and talking about a God they didn't believe in at the time. So I think that that sort of
that's a legacy. This next chapter, right? The next chapter.
That's the next chapter. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Every time any writer writes a book or a memoir, in a way, it's a creation of a legacy for their children and future generations.
That's right.
So.
Well, you know, many people write a memoir, but not many people write two memoirs. And of course, for those of us that enjoy the first, I couldn't help but pick up on your second one, and I'd be curious to know the kind of reaction you've gotten so far from your book, Pilgrim. Are you hearing then from people who have become devotees, having read Unfinished Business, or are there people that are picking this one up, you know, mid-story, I'll call it?
Well, both. Both are, you don't need to read the first to find your way with the second. What I do, I've finally come to understand and accept about myself is as a writer, I go on journey of healing and spiritual growth, and I write about it with the hope that other people be inspired to consider journeys of their own. And I find that I look at that as a calling. It's sort of my new career. But one with a real deeper sense of mission. So I think that people in my first book, all people had unfinished emotional and spiritual business in their life. Regrets, amends that need to be made, people to reconnect with. And by the same token, I think many people, especially when you're in your 40s and 50s and getting older, have an almost biological need to search deeper for meaning. And that's what pilgrimage is. In a sense, our whole life is a pilgrimage in of that meaning.
You know, the other point I might want to make, of course, your faith that you were born into and surrounded with as a child was a Jewish faith.
Right.
For me, it was Roman Catholic. So it was going to Catholic school, complete with my watch plaid uniform, my beanie, my can't wear knee socks and tie shoes. You had to do this, you know, all this regimen. And of course, redhead firstborn. I couldn't wait to bust out of the discipline that was all about. But I'm grateful for it, of course, years to follow. But I don't know if this was your case, but having grown up in such a rules-based religion, and practice as a family that I'm eternally grateful for. But when I started hitting that wonderment phase, I really needed to open the door wide. And like you, I certainly haven't toured around in nearly the facilities or the classes and so on, but most certainly at different phases of my life, enjoyed getting in closer proximity to people who were so unlike me to make sure I stayed anchored in truly what it was I believed in or could even find it.
You know, you just said that so eloquently, the passage from ritual or rules to wonder and amazement, something that almost you can't articulate and that you want to share with others and be in the presence of others. And that is a passage. With me, there's been a passage back because I've come back after experiencing traditions, Hindu, Buddhist, Quaker, Christian rituals. I've come back to the Judaism that was my birthright, but a more mystical, amazement-based practice of it that also has a lot of rituals.
Right.
But these rituals don't feel like rules to me at this point. Yeah. They feel like those door openers you're talking about.
Well, and that's exactly the difference. They're rituals, not rules. And so we might want to even think about those of us parents with the responsibility to raise our, you know, children, or any of us have the influence of youth, is to realize we can probably only give so much structure and think it's going to stick, that it really is going to come to life experiencing and that searching process and being constantly challenged, right, Lee? I mean, how many times our faith, whether we knew to call it or not, was being challenged by the ups and downs of life?
You're absolutely right. We each go on a journey, and it's the one we can only take for ourselves and learn the lessons en route. I opened my book with a quote from Proust to that nature. Buddha said that. Buddha said not to even take your guru's word as gospel. You know, be lights unto yourself. You know, it takes that, what we talked about before. You opened this conversation with using the word reflection, reflecting on your life, becoming self-aware, and opening yourself to new meanings and new understandings.
That's what I said. We're speaking with Lee Kravis, and his second book that just came out is Pilgrim, Risking the Life I Have to Find the Faith That I Seek. You can learn about Lee's work and other writings at Lee Kravitz, KRAVITZ.com. Also, wonderful writings at www.myunfinishedbusiness.com, which ties back to his first book. Lee, your subtitle, Risking the Life I Have to Find the Faith I Seek. Did you feel like you were putting things at risk when you started this journey then?
Yes, because, first of all, you know, when you go on a serious spiritual quest, and the more you get into it, and mine wasn't just a surface quest, I really was looking for wholeness and a spiritual home, there's always the possibility that you may pull away from those you love. Buddha, at age 29, before he went forth on his great journey towards enlightenment, just one night left his wife and newborn child. Jesus in the New Testament says that you must, you know, hate your family if you're to be a true disciple. There is almost a spiritual quest at that deep level, presumes some sort of risk of the life you love, the people you love. Now, in the end, my love has just grown as a result of what I've done.
And I would say a good part of that is it because you've reconnected with a deeper, deeper you that you now can pile on in bigger ways to whatever it is now your encore is, whether it be your writing, photography, cheering your kids on, escaping somewhere with your wife, and who knows where your next writing or next book is going to come from.
Yes, I mean, I have a little bit of a sense of what I'm being compelled by at the moment, and it's the process of aging. And also death. Those things which I'm afraid of, I always find as a starting point for my new journey so that I can reflect upon my feelings and then come to a better place with that. And I'm excited about that. So I think the next book will have to do with aging and dying.
Which sounds like a beautiful trilogy, even though you hadn't started out necessarily knowing it would be a trilogy, but also knowing you, it isn't going to be just one more book. It's going to be a variety of other journeys to share with your devout followers, as I am. Well, Lee Kravis, thank you so much for being with us today. Again, my guest has been Lee Kravis's book, Pilgrim, Risking the Life I Have to Find the Faith That I Seek. Go to www.leekravis, KRVITZ.com. Godspeed, and thanks so much for contributing today, Lee.
And great talking with you, as always.
As always. We'll be back again.
Okay, bye.
Thank you. Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll-free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580.